It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The State Public Service Commission regulates public utilities, and in our state's transition to clean energy, the agency is increasingly involved in areas relating to renewable energy. So we examine the regulatory environment for rooftop solar. With your questions, call at any time at 800-642-1234. Conversation is right here at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Rebecca Cameron-Vock is Commission Chair of the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. Chair Vock, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me again.
Well, let's dip into this solar arena, if you will. Republicans in the legislature back a bill that would allow people to access community solar or shared solar projects by developers that are not utilities. What do you make of that idea?
I think it's an idea that has been gaining traction across the country, especially over the course of the last 18 months or so. And I'm a big fan of all of the above. So we in the energy industry are undergoing a generational transition as we move away from fossil-based fuels into clean sources of energy. And from all the data that I've read and all the data I continue to read, I believe that it's going to take an all of the above approach to get Wisconsin there. Certainly community solar is an incredible way to get there, because we have to be focused on all sorts of different solutions. And as this industry is changing, that means we have to look at different ways that utilities and, quite frankly, customers can be in the business of generating their own electricity.
So in the all of the above approach, that means there is space for third party developers of solar. How is solar power from these third party developers being regulated in the state?
So there's a difference between a third party financing arrangement mm-hmm. and an independent power producer, right? So the question of whether or not a third party can come in and help finance a project has been the subject of a lot of litigation, both at the commission and in the courts. And so we do currently have a couple of lawsuits that are pending. So I can't get into the specifics of those cases, but I can tell you that as a general matter, the issue has been less than clear in Wisconsin. And we've seen that play out in that a lot of customers are hesitant to go out and make a big capital investment on a solar project if they feel that at the end of investing all of that capital, they're not going to be able to interconnect to the utility. So we at the commission are working on things like the interconnection rules in the interim as the legal issue makes its way through the courts here in Wisconsin.
And when you say interconnection rules, you know, it's like these solar developers want to ensure that they're able to connect their solar arrays into a public utility system, that those two will connect.
That's exactly right. And at the core of it all, Kate, is safety. So we want to ensure that those interconnection rules reflect the latest status of the industry. So things like what's the size of the inverter, what are the insurance requirements? And those rules hadn't been looked at since they had been originally passed nearly 20 years ago. So we felt that it was extraordinarily important to take a look at those rules and to make sure that they reflect the current reality. So they're nearing the end of that process, and we hope to be able to send them over to the legislature relatively soon.
Relatively soon. I want to just turn here for a moment to protecting consumers who do want solar. We've seen the Dane County Sheriff investigating Waukesha-based Sun Badger Solar after the complaints the company failed to install solar panels for their clients. How can households and consumers be more protected in this marketplace?
So we do need consumer protection. We receive a fair number of inquiries at the commission And then, of course, those get referred over to the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection, DACCAP, because they house all of our consumer protection policies in the state. We know that consumers are becoming more educated about their electricity and their sources of electricity. But what we need to ensure is that they're also checking out their contractors if they're choosing to put solar on their rooftops, the same way that they would for any other home improvement project.
But when you say check out, there's only so much you can do if, you know, a company fails in the contract to do what they said they were going to do.
Right. That's right.
Rebecca Cameron-Vock is chair of the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. Call in with your questions, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In this state budget writing season, we examine the work of the Public Service Commission, the state authority regulating public utilities. Call in with questions, 800-642-1234. Rebecca Cameron-Vock is chair of the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. Let's bring in Chris in Port Wing with a comment. Chris, go ahead.
Hi. I want to thank you for having this great topic, and it's a pleasure to be able to talk to Chairman Bock. Chairperson Bock. Anyway, I wanted to give a quick tip on consumer safety. There's a national certification organization for solar installers. It's called NABCEP, which you can look up NABCEP on the net. It stands for the National North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners. Those of us who are certified installers have a very high code of ethics, and we are the best installers in the nation. And you can find us, and the local ones are right on our website. I also had a quick question for the chairperson.
Go ahead.
There's a good deal of funding both in the bipartisan infrastructure law that was passed last year and the Inflation Reduction Act that can go towards development of renewables and energy storage in Wisconsin. Does she see any policy changes that need to take place in order to be able to take full access to those funds? It's billions of dollars.
Chair Vock.
That's a really good question, and thanks for the information on the certification. That was helpful. No, I don't think that there are policy changes that are needed. In fact, within our state energy office and our Office of Energy Innovation at the PSC, we've been hard at work combing through the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act, working with other state agencies and also working with utilities in making sure that Wisconsin doesn't leave any of those federal dollars on the table, because we will take all of the help that we can get as we continue to build out our clean energy generation in Wisconsin.
Chris, thanks for the call. Let's turn to state budget. The legislature's budget committee crafting a plan for the two-year budget now. What are your hopes for future state funding in your area?
Well, I'm hopeful that what will eventually get passed as a budget will continue to build on Governor Evers' record of investing in clean energy, clean water, broadband access. I know the budget process it's a give and take, and it sometimes follows a winding road, but I'm confident that from the PSC's perspective, we will still be able to keep a very tight focus on energy efficiency, on ensuring the safe, reliable, and cost-effective provision of electricity and heat from our utilities, and that we will continue to work to deploy broadband infrastructure to eliminate the digital divide in Wisconsin. So I'm confident that at the end of the day, we will have a budget that will allow us to continue to do the important work that we're doing at the commission.
Let's take another call, Todd in La Crosse. Todd, what is your question?
Yes. Hi, thank you. It might be a little vague, but I've heard I'm very interested in like community sized solar projects, solar panels on a solar farm, perhaps to sell the power to an entire town or city. And I've heard our state makes it kind of difficult to do those sort of things compared to other states, perhaps because the town is then a utility. But can you comment at all about what can be done to encourage large community solar?
Todd, thank you.
Yep, that's a great question. And at the top of the hour, Kate actually mentioned there's proposed legislation that's circulating in the legislature right now that would actually make it easier for local municipalities to go down the community solar route. I think your question, the basis of the question is correct, that traditionally it has been more difficult in Wisconsin for local communities to get together and put together a community solar project. And that's because of the ambiguity that developers find when they look at the state of Wisconsin's definition of a public utility. So the legislation that is circulating right now aims to eliminate some of those barriers. And I will also say that over the years, especially the last 2 years in particular, utilities are becoming more innovative in terms of the rates and the tariffs that they are offering within their service territory to meet that need, because that is a growing
area. And yes. Chair Vock, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Rebecca Cameron Vock, Chair of the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Tis the season for spring cleaning, yes, yes, and garage sales along the way. Historic river towns up and down the Mississippi River preparing for the start of this 100-mile garage sale that gets underway tomorrow in Wisconsin and Minnesota. Call in with questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Larry Nielsen is president of Mississippi Valley Partners, a chief sponsor for the 100-mile garage sale. Larry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you. It's fun to be on board with you guys.
Well, this is a treat for us. What can people find at these sales? What are they like?
Well, it's just kind of an amazing potpourri of things. You can find furniture, fishing equipment, anything you would find at a garage sale that you typically used to see in times 100. It's a big deal. People sell just about anything. It is pretty well established that it is the largest garage sale in the world by volume of vendors. Oh. And there's just a ton of vendors. Some towns, there'll be blocks long, two or three blocks, where everybody on that block will have things out for sale, and some of them plan their whole year around it. They make a business out of it, where they will buy things over the years or during the year, and when it comes time for the garage sale, they'll put it up for sale and hopefully make a little money for them on it.
Well, checking out these sales will involve driving, a good bit of driving. How should the bargain hunters prepare for the event and navigate this?
Well, you can do a little bit of research on Facebook or even Google 100-mile garage sale, or go on Facebook, punch in 100-mile garage sale, and that'll give you some information. Some of the vendors will post on there that, come to our house. We've got this going on. But generally speaking, it's pretty easy to find the participants. All you have to do is drive along the river on either side, and there'll be signs up saying, one block over, humongous sale, and some of them are right on the highways. It's on the Minnesota side, it's Highway 61 that runs around the lake, and on the Wisconsin side, it's Highway 35. But if you're driving up and down the road, there'll be good signage, and you will see people with their garage doors open and stuff out in the yard, and it's pretty easy to tell that there's a sale going on.
How early do we need to get up, or how should we time our arrival at these sales?
Well, you know, we have a lot of people come from all over the country, and they basically started showing up a day or two ago. They'll get a hotel room for a couple of days, and they'll get up early and start driving around, scope things out. I would say most of the vendors don't really start until 8 o'clock, some of them around 7 o'clock, but generally speaking, I think if you start showing up around 8-ish in the morning, that's pretty good.
Oh, that's not early for us morning show people. We can do that. We can accommodate that. You know, some of the fun of garage sale shopping is that negotiation part, kind of haggling with the garage sale hosts. Do you have any suggestions for good negotiating strategy if you like an item and want to buy it?
Well, I kind of always approach it as what's fair, mm-hmm. and try and arrive at a fair price. Nobody wants to pay too much, you know, and everybody, I would say if you really want the deals, the last couple of days, you know, Saturday and Sunday is not quite as big a day, but Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday are lots of people around. And by Sunday, things are even late in the afternoon on Saturday. Things have kind of died down a little bit as far as the crowds and the stuff that's left. You can work a good deal, and if you see something you really like, you can really bargain at that point, because the vendor knows that it's just about over.
It's getting into crunch time territory. Talking with Larry Nielsen, president of Mississippi Valley Partners. It's a sponsor for the annual 100-mile garage sale. You can join in with your questions, your experiences along the way at 800-642-1234. Larry, you mentioned Facebook, people advertising materials for sale online, like Facebook Marketplace. How is technology changing the traditional garage scale landscape?
Well, you know, I don't think it's changed it too much for these big events like this. But I suspect that for your normal person, it's going to say, oh, I'm going to pick, some Saturday in June to have a garage sale. I think you see a lot more people, instead of doing that, are doing a Facebook Marketplace thing and selling stuff that way. The people I talk to that are big into buying and selling stuff, they do that marketplace a lot, mm-hmm. instead of, a little less, actual garage sales. And that said, this event is, over the years, has grown. This is our 30th annual.
Oh, wow.
100-mile garage sale, and kind of an interesting story. Mississippi Valley Partners is basically all the towns and villages around Lake Pepin got together 31 years ago, and a bunch of people involved in the tourism business and the Chamber of Commerce's and stuff, and they said, what can we do early in the spring to kind of kick off the tourism season and get people coming around our area? Lake Pepin is the largest and most scenic lake on the entire length of the Mississippi River, kind of a big tourism area. And they were brainstorming and said, how are we going to kick this off in the spring and get a bunch of people coming? And they came up with a, let's have a big garage sale all the way around the lake and get everybody involved. And so that's what they did. And they marketed it pretty big. And in the first year, it was kind of a big thing. And they thought, well, that was successful. Let's really push it. So the next few years, they pushed it even more, and it just kept growing and growing. And like you say, it became the largest garage sale in the world by the number of vendors. It really got to be a big thing and brings a ton of people to the area. So it's been fun to see it grow into really a self-sustaining, large
event. Yes. Well, thanks for giving us that backstory on how it all began. You know, it really sounds like it's a well-oiled machine at this point. I mean, with your vendors doing it year after year, do you have tips on how a family can plan and carry out a successful garage sale?
I think it depends on what you're selling, for one thing, and I, as an organization, and me personally, we don't really have any real tips other than talk to other people, and most of the people that decide to have a garage sale on their own for years have been going around and seeing what the other people are doing, and they say, oh yeah, I got the same sort of things for sale, so I'll do it like this person does it, and it's kind of really grown into a big thing, and like you say, self-sustaining, and if you're looking for things to buy, I talk to people all the time. They usually bring, if they have a pickup or a big SUV or something, they usually bring that over when they come, and they usually stay for a couple of days, and they just poke around, and all these towns and villages are so quaint and mm-hmm. historic. People just really love it around here. So it makes a great spring deal. And the Mississippi River flooded this year. I'm sure you guys are aware of that.
Yes.
And last Tuesday it crested, and it's already dropped about 30 inches from the crest. So we were a little concerned about that up till a week ago. We said, is the water going to keep going up or what's going to happen? And actually, like I say, it crested on Tuesday, been going down. So people are now, instead of focused on the flood, they're focused on getting their garage sale items out.
Setting up their tables.
Happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
The water receding. What types of things are usually popular for selling at these garage sales? What seems to fly in those first hours?
You see a lot of stuff like, a lot of antique stuff for one. And it doesn't matter what it is. It might be antique tools, antique fishing stuff, almost anything, furniture. There's a lot of antique furniture out there. People are looking for that special little hutch or something they might see and say, oh yeah, my grandma used to have one like this. And of course they fall in love with the nostalgia and makes their whole weekend to find that special treasure that they're looking for. And then there's just the typical, clothes and just about anything you can think of. You'll see automobiles for sale. You'll see boats for sale. You'll see, like I say, furniture and antiques and then just typical stuff like clothes and other things like that.
In closing here, we've had such inflationary times, difficult to buy and make the dollar stretch. Is higher inflation, do you think, affecting the garage sale economy?
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see because this year is really the apex of where inflation is affecting us, and you're hearing about it more and more. So I'm kind of thinking a lot of people are going to be out there looking for that deal and say, hey, I can buy some pre-worn clothes that are in great condition for 25 cents on the dollar and stuff like that.
Snag a deal.
Yeah.
Larry, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was always fun to talk, and we'll
see you at the garage sales. Yes.
Yes. See you at the garage sales.
Larry Nielsen, president of Mississippi Valley Partners, a sponsor of the 100 Mile Garage Sale. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.